All right, guys, welcome to the very first episode of What the F Stop podcast. I am Lance Reese, a portrait and fashion photographer in Portland, Oregon. And today's guest is Carl of Hot Carl Productions, one of Portland's most prominent music video directors and videographers. So how long have you been doing video?
So I'd say 4 years, pretty solid. Before that, you know, I used to have a little camcorder and I would record my band when we were on tour. I'd do a bunch of stuff like that, make fun little videos where it's like us goofing around on tour, some live shows. But that wasn't very serious. Didn't really know what the hell I was doing, but I'd say it's been a really solid 4 years of work on the music video front, and then recently movie and some more short films.
Just so the listeners know, you and I have worked together numerous times on projects, music videos, and I did some promotional photos for this short film you're working on. But what can you tell us about that short film? How close is it to being done? Because I'm excited.
Yeah, great questions. So I'm working on a film called Jason Rising. It's a Friday the 13th fan film. And it was going to be about 50 minutes, and now I think it might actually be a little bit longer before we're done. We're pretty close to wrapping it up. I think we have like 4 full days left of filming before we can call it wrapped on the filming side. But we've been editing, so we have a lot of progress done. We have a really good cut of the movie right now, but we just got to get the last couple days of shooting. We had some, we got rained out one day on a really makeup heavy effects day. And then now with the coronavirus, it's really hard for makeup artists in particular to, you know, get next to people for hours on end. So we have a really cool effect where we have Pamela Voorhees, who will be headless in the movie. And she's going to be a zombie, but it requires a lot of makeup. So we're basically kind of stuck there until, we can figure out what the hell the guidance is for makeup like that.
I feel like when people hear fan film, I almost hate to call it a fan film, because when I think of a fan film, you don't really think of all the work that really goes into it.
Yeah.
So if an inspiring videographer is thinking about doing their own fan film based on something that they love, what really goes into the fan film? Because I know you've been working on it for quite some time.
Yeah. And so great point. We've been working on it for, James and I started about 3 years ago. And part of it started because of that little photo shoot that you organized, and I tagged along and I got some video of the Friday the 13th thing in Sandy, Oregon. And yeah. James saw that and was like, holy crap, that looks great. Carl just went out there with his, you know, friggin' camera, and they got something that looked pretty cool. So then his wheels started turning. I didn't know that at that point. But he hit me up, and James and I have been friends. We worked on a short film together called Blood and Sugar. We met through my music producer, Gabe Johnston. And James is he's kind of like you and I, where he just goes and does things, and, you know, things that most people won't do because they feel like what happens if they fail, or, you know, they need to wait for somebody's permission or somebody to tell them to go do it. James is just like, nope, I'm going to go get this done. So anyway, he hits me up. So 3 years ago, we started working on this thing. And I want to say we spent a good 6 months on story and screenplay. We've actually spent an entire time on it. We're still doing refinements to it and tweaking. So some things are never done, but it's a lot of work. We did a lot of crowd fundraising. We wanted real actors. So most of our actors are SAG. And I think at this point we've raised just shy of above $50,000. It's just a little over $50,000. A lot of that goes into props and makeup and things like food. We have a lot of like gore stuff. So there's a lot of money. A lot of the budget's been spent there. So it's a lot practical of work, effects. But yeah, so tons of practical effects. It's not easy. You could go the route where you just take your friends around you and the people you know and the things you already have and go that route. But we wanted to go bigger to tell our story properly. And I think we're nailing it. I mean, it's funny when people hear your fan film, they kind of roll their eyes like, oh, great. But, when we put it out there, the internet can be a brutal place, as you know, and we've had near universal praise. So that feels good. It doesn't always happen like that. So I think we're working hard. We've got a really talented cast, a really talented crew, and I think we're nailing it.
That's really good insight, because usually when you see fan films on YouTube per se, whether they're 10 minutes or they're 30 minutes, et cetera, I think the standard person might assume it only took a few days to put together. And you've been doing this for 3 years, yep. And $50,000 and up just to put this together is,
yeah.
That's good for people to know. Not to say that you can't, you know, put something together for a lot less in a lot shorter time. Yep. But I know you're really passionate about it, and everything I've seen so far is, as far as the trailers and stuff go, it looks really good, and I'm really excited.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, if we had a smaller script and we did a 10-minute short, that'd be one thing. But once we kind of hit mm-hmm. the core idea and we knew we had the mom in there and we wanted her headless, it was – things started escalating. And then you're like, well, how much of the story can you skip? And so we had to start mm-hmm. flushing it out. And next thing you know, that adds days to production and every day cost.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So – the short film looks awesome so far, but you're really known for your music videos.
Yes, that's true. That's my bread and butter. It's what I really enjoy doing. I guess that's my main passion. I love short films too, but music videos are something, I don't know, to me, there's something special. You get a chance to work with a band and help them deliver their vision. I hope I've always done that. You know, I got into it because I would hire people, and when the videos would be close to what I wanted, but they wouldn't quite be there. I feel like people don't get the aesthetics of music that's more on the extreme side of the fence. So whether it's rap or metal, you know, if it's not kind of standard bubblegum stuff, a lot of people, especially the ones who came from like film school type backgrounds, they don't get it. They have the camera and the tripod. Mm-hmm. So the band footage doesn't look very good. They don't want to do like, why do you have blood in there? I'm like, well, it's a goddamn metal band. Of course there's going to be blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your go-to camera for music videos? Do you use multiple cameras or do you just have one go-to?
Great question. So for years I was using Nikon. So I was using a Nikon D810 or a Nikon D7000. That's actually what I started on. Now I'm using Blackmagic Pocket 4Ks. So they are really amazing cameras. So they're $1,300 now. They come with a really amazing software called DaVinci Resolve. And they have really good, this gets camera nerdy, they shoot raw video to USB cards. So you can have a USB, like 2 terabyte drive that you can get for like $200, hook it up via USB, mm-hmm. and you don't need to worry about SD cards or CFast cards. And what it means is you can shoot for like 2 days in a row, not have to empty the card, and it shoots raw. And what raw does is raw gives you flexibility where you can, let's say part of your image was too bright or it's too dark, in post you can go and explore the options. If I wanted to turn the leaves green from green to purple, I can do that in post, mm-hmm. and it looks natural. Mm-hmm. Now when I was using my Nikon D850, which is another camera I love, you can do a lot of things in post, but sometimes it breaks apart. So if I'm trying to save part of an image that was too dark, so if you're in a forest and some things are really shady and some things are really bright, it's brutal. So
yes,
those are some of the shots where you can really get into trouble and you can't save them in post. But in RAW, you can go do whatever the hell you want, basically, without it breaking apart. So I love that camera. It's cheap. The image quality is just gorgeous. I can't say enough about it. That said, use whatever you have, because these days, even your iPhone's good enough.
Yeah, I've seen professional commercials being filmed on iPhones, and even movie in theaters was filmed on an iPhone. So it's pretty intense what they can do nowadays.
Yeah, that said, it's not just grab your iPhone and go. I mean, you can do that, but a lot of it's down to the lighting and then coloring and post. So the Lady Gaga video that was filmed on an iPhone, if you look at the behind the scenes of it, go YouTube it. It's insane the gear they have there. I mean, they're still on a legit shoot with a $100,000 camera, but they just happen to have an iPhone there.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yep. And you mentioned lighting, so I want to talk about lighting for a second. Do you prefer using natural light or do you use superficial light? And if so, what is your go-to for that?
Great question. So one of the things that I like to do is I like to change it up every time. So for me, outdoors, you know, if you're on a nice sunny day, there's obviously no need to use lights. But let's say you're out in the woods and you have somebody like a witch who's in the field. They might kind of blend into the background unless you give them a little bit of light. And sometimes all you have to do is give them a light shooting to their shoulder, and it gives them like a little rim light on their shoulder and helps separate them from the background. So that can work. Mm-hmm. I love natural light. I love shooting outdoors, especially at golden hour. But there's also something really cool if you have a good, strong vision on how to light something really creatively. So I love playing around with lighting. Yeah, I know you go to Cobalt. I love going to Cobalt. It's one of my favorite spaces in Portland. And some of the lighting setups that we've done in there, and I say we work with Freddie Heath. He and I do most of the music videos together. He's pretty brilliant. You know, we've done some really, really cool videos in there with crazy lighting. And I actually got some time lapse of a couple of different lighting setups recently. So I'm hoping to post that soon.
Yeah, Cobalt's great. And their lighting setup is amazing.
I actually bring all my own lights in there. I don't use their stuff. It's kind of funny. Yeah.
Oh.
And they borrowed mine a few times recently. Okay. Yeah. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm starting to get some good stuff. People are asking to borrow it. Cool. Yeah. Oh, wow. So I like to change it up. And I think, you know, it's fun. And that's how you learn, is you get to figure out what's the best way to shoot in natural light and when do you need to augment it. And then also, if you're shooting indoors, what's good indoors? How do you make that look nice? Do you want it stylized? Do you want it looking natural? And those are all fun things to play with.
I feel
the big thing
saying.
Is just practice. Figure out what you like and what you don't.
Mm-hmm. And you primarily shoot in Portland, but I know you travel like hours on end just for location.
Yeah. I mean, I've been flown down to Vegas for a shoot down there. And then I've had bands come up from California. So I'll go anywhere. We're so fortunate in the Pacific Northwest. We have so many amazing locations within 2 hours. All you have to do is make the effort to go drive and you'll be shocked at what you can find. So filming, you know, I have a shoot later this year where I think, assuming I can get the permits, we're going to go down to the Alvord Desert and go film a music video there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's like a 6 hour drive from Portland. So I don't know. I'm game for anything. We've driven to Newport to film in a old turn of the century dairy barn that was just basically infested with owl and rat feces. Yeah, and it had holes in the walls. And I was like, okay, so we're smoking this. So then you get these really cool shafts of light come in. And it was amazing. But then I almost like died on the way back where my lungs started to seize up because all the allergies from whatever the hell was in the grass or the rat poop or the owl pellets. I'm not sure, but that was really brutal.
Yeah, that's good things to know. I often also shoot in abandoned locations and you never know what you're going to find. It's always definitely good to have something to cover your mouth with.
Yeah, well, sure. We don't have to worry about that now, do we?
Nope. That's right. And so did you teach yourself or did you go to school for video?
Great question. So I taught myself. That said, you know, there's a lot of great resources out there on YouTube. And one of my favorite things that I did a couple years ago is I signed up for this place called Shane's Inner Circle. And they've now rebranded it to the Hurlbutt Academy. So this guy, Shane Hurlbutt, he was the DP, so director of photography on Terminator Salvation, Babysitter, which is on Netflix, Rim of the World. He's done tons and tons and tons of movies. And he's amazing. Mm-hmm. But he has a paid group of cinematographers. And I forget how much it is a month. I think it's like $20. But you get added to a private Facebook group. So they have classes online, which those are really good. But then the private Facebook group itself is so worth the cost of admission because you get rid of the riffraff who don't care, who just shitpost. So it's people who care.
Yeah.
And you can post images, people or videos, and people will give you feedback or ask questions or tell you a great job or whatever. But it's been a huge, huge source of, you know, inspiration, of learning. So I don't quite think it's fair to say I'm exactly self-taught, but I never went to school for it. Most of it just, you know, learning from friends. You know, you pick stuff up from everywhere, right? Like, I mean, you and I have learned a lot from each other. My friend Freddie's great. Bill at Cobalt has been really cool to work with. You know, that guy, I don't know everything, his whole resume, but he's amazing. And I've watched him get some jaw dropping results like super fast. He just kind of knows. So you pick up a little bit from everyone.
I totally agree. That's exactly how I learned photography, YouTube. And on that topic, actually, so if we're thinking about, you know, learning our trade on YouTube, who would you say influences you? Is there someone that you follow on the regular on YouTube or anywhere else for like inspiration or knowledge?
Yeah, great question. So I'll say Shane Hurlbutt again. I just think that guy's pretty brilliant. Peter McKinnon obviously blew up, and I think a lot of people are familiar with him for video and photography. I think he's awesome. And then Indie Mogul is a really great channel. They have been crushing it in the last year or so, and they just have so many amazing videos. If you stumble across it now, you know, kiss a week goodbye. You're just going to learn so much. And the host is really charismatic. He's fun. They have amazing guests, and they do such great jobs at breaking down different lighting setups. That's probably my favorite channel right now for learning new stuff. I don't know if you saw some of the product photography things that I was doing recently, but I watched one of their videos and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I have, you know, basically the same stuff. I can go try to go do that. And then I went and did it and I was like, all right, that's my first time doing this. And the results are really good. So they're amazing. Mm-hmm. And then the last one I'll say is Pony Smasher. It's the director of Shazam. I don't know if you've seen that movie. He also did Lights Out and he's done a couple other things. He's amazing. And he has a YouTube channel called Pony Smasher. His name is David Sandberg, but he does really amazing breakdowns of the big movies, of his short films. And so he's been posting a bunch of short films during the quarantine, but his story is pretty crazy. And he's pretty brutally honest when he has his little video. So he'll tell you all the struggles, he'll tell you the good stuff, the bad stuff, and everything in between.
And so you've been featured for your music videos on the front page of Metal Injection.
Yep.
Is that correct? And you've been featured on the PRP.com, Revolver.com, and Blabbermouth.net.
Yep. All of those multiple times, which is really cool. So I do, you know, since I mainly do metal videos, those are the big sites for metal bands. So it's the first time I had a video hit there was jaw dropping. I couldn't believe it. I was just like, are you kidding me? Sure. Oh, man, this is amazing. That's so cool. Yeah. And then you wake up the next day and life is, you know, just goes on. It's kind of funny. You know, your big goal that I worked for so hard for like 2-3 years, it hits. And then the next day you're like, oh, that was it. Now I have to do it again.
I know that feeling.
And then, you know, and then you keep going. And I'm sure you're in the same boat where, you know, there's some goals where I've worked towards for, you know, years in some cases, and you hit them and you blow past them and then you're like, that's it. All right. Yeah. Do you take time and like celebrate those, or what do you do when you hit those?
Well, you know, that's the thing about goals. I'm the same way. I've had many goals over the last 2 years that I've crushed, and it's great in the moment, but like you said, the next day you're over it. So I've had to practice taking it in and enjoying it for a longer period of time. It's once you crush one goal, it's on to the next, you know. It's like, oh, shit, if I can do this, then, you know, like my first magazine cover I got, it was a small magazine that no one's ever heard of. Okay, well, that was my first publication, so I was really excited because I had a goal of, you know, making it into a publication. But then once I hit that goal, it was like, well, shit, what else can I do? Can I do Vanity Fair or Vogue? And then sure enough, I got my work into Vogue. And then it was like, oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Now what?
So I have a feeling we're pretty similar here. So, you know, for me, when you hit those goals that at one point they seem impossible, right? It's like I'll call it my crazy dream. It's that thing that, you know, for me, one of the recent ones was shooting in a nuclear plant up in Elma, Washington. They have a facility called SATSOP and they never finished building it. So it's abandoned. They have people maintaining it and everything, but it's not active. It never was, but it's beautiful.
Right.
I saw that place a couple years ago and was like, God, I want to shoot there. And it was impossible. And next thing you know, we did it and we crushed it. And the video is doing amazing. So, but now, you know, there's definitely some celebration. But when I say that, it's like, all right, I had a beer one night and said, all right, I feel pretty good about this. I did it. And then the next day you're like, how do I top it? You know, instantly. I don't want to say I'm not happy with anything, but there's just that drive to just keep going. I don't ever feel like good resting on my, you know, I'll call it success, or you're like, all right, that was good. All right, I'm going to take a break. It's like, no, I just instantly need that next thing. And I don't know about you. My guess is you're probably pretty similar where it doesn't take long to figure out those goals. And it's not like I write them down on a sheet of paper and say, this is my next goal, but you just kind of know intuitively, like, all right, I have that next thing and I'm going to hit it. We're going to do this.
Yes. I think that's something that all creatives have in common. So a lot of listeners can probably relate to that. some great websites to be featured on, I would be very proud of myself. I am proud of you personally. Do you have a video off the top of your head that just kind of blew up among all your other videos? Was there one that stands out
to you?
Yeah, so
there were two. Actually, I mean, one of the ones was ones that we collaborated on, and it was the Dead Animal Assembly Plant Rise With Me video. So for me, I had two videos one year that just took off and went crazy, and one of them was American Overdose's Letting Go. We happened to film over at the coast in this nasty little forest. And I say nasty little forest, it looks very decrepit. Like you're going to film a black metal band there or something. And I colored it super cold blue. And the band had Waylon from Mushroomhead guesting on the track, and they flew him out. And the whole video was almost a shit show every step of the way. And then we just busted it out. And I mean, Waylon was fighting me when we were filming. Like, he was just like, I don't want to do this. I'm leaving my glasses on. And it was just a nightmare the entire time. The band was whining and complaining, kind of. Not all of them. Somebody slept in, or I don't know. It was difficult. Yeah. But we made it work, and we ran out of daylight. And it was one of those things where I was like, we need 2 days to do what you want to do, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, that video started blowing up. Really happy. And then the next one that year that was pretty pivotal was the Dead Animal Assembly Plant video. And you're a huge key portion of that for a couple of reasons. One, the opening drone shot, plus the other drone shots, but also the locations. And so you helped us find these amazing locations. And then we went out and just crushed it. And that band is so good. They're so talented. So that 1-2 punch of the American Overdose video, which was amazing, the Dead Animal Assembly Plant video, which is amazing, and then the third one that year that just blew up was the Vintersea video for Sky Set Ablaze. That one cracked a million views on Facebook, like, so fast. The American Overdose video cracked a million views so far on YouTube, too, which also is pretty amazing. The Vintersea video blew up, Dead Animal Assembly Plant video blew up, and the American Overdose video blew up. And the Dead Animal Assembly Plant has the least views out of all of them, but it's the one that got referenced the most for the next couple years. And it took a while to top that. Yeah, to top any one of those three. It took a little bit. And I don't mean it just in play count, but quality, where you're like, okay, everything came together and like it matches the song. The tone of the video is great. Like everything, you know, you can do, there's some videos, we got some really cool shots, we did some really cool stuff, there's a neat idea. But I want to say it probably took another year and a half, 2 years before I felt like, yep, I topped those and I know it.
So when you have a video like that that blows up, do you notice that you start getting hit up by other bands?
Yeah, so the great thing about doing music videos is each one is like a commercial for your work, and the bands want them to do well. I want them to do well. So we all push it really hard, hopefully. Yeah. And we should chat about that because not everybody does. And then if it does well, like I just did one for Skin Lab, you know, I got probably 30 friend requests from it. And there were definitely a few people that were like, oh, hey, you know, we should do something. But it's also, you know, during a pandemic, so can't really do much right now. But, you know, each one of those that comes out, you know, people turn their heads when they're good. They know quality. They know good stuff.
And speaking of bands, you are in a band, which I think we mentioned, but what can you tell me about the band that you're in? How long have you been in the band?
Yeah, great question. So I'm in two bands. I'm in a band called Ligature Marks, and I'm in a band called Vintersea, and they're both metal. One is Ligature Marks is a lot more kind of American metal. I don't want to say metalcore, but if I had to just toss out one genre to say, that's kind of where we fit. Vintersea's a lot more on the European side, so it's got a lot more of the traditional riffing. There's no breakdowns in the songs, not a whole lot of chugging. So that one's a little bit more like, I'll say, prog or black metal or melodic death metal. Yeah. And they both, I've been in both of them for probably like 2 years or so, and they're both doing really, really well.
And what's your role?
So in Vintersea, I play bass, and then Ligature Marks, I play guitar. But in Ligature Marks, Ben and I are the ones that kind of like steer the band and are the ones that set the agenda. And then the Vintersea, Riley is kind of like the main leader of that band with me kind of backing him up. It's nice to not have to wear the hat that like pushes everything in either band. It's for the first time in a while, I actually felt like, oh, we got a pretty good team here, and it makes all the difference.
Who influences you as far as, you know?
Yeah, musically, I would say Gojira is my current favorite band. It's funny because I feel like, you know, I listen to music all the time. A lot of it ebbs and flows. I'm that type of person where I find new songs and I love them and I play them out because I just listen to them nonstop. and I just cycle through stuff, and I'm always searching for things. Rammstein's always amazing. I don't think that's influenced my music a whole lot. Definitely an interesting thing, because I feel like I've always had a unique voice musically. Like, it's just been mine. Even if I try to rip somebody off, it still sounds like me.
Rammstein is the best show I've ever been
to. Within 1 month, I saw Lady Gaga on Rammstein, and I kind of expected Lady Gaga to have like more pizzazz or whatever. And she did great, but I was like, dude, I'm sorry, Rammstein. Like, fire everywhere. That small ass stage in the middle of the crowd that they just kind of came through halfway through the set or something. I was just nuts. I love them. They were so good.
Yeah. I have tickets to see them in August in Texas, and I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen now.
Oh, that sucks. So yeah. I'm sure they'll come back though.
Oh, I'm sure. I hope so. They don't come around
but,
too often.
No, but if they skip it, they're gonna come hit it. I was lucky enough to play with Gojira this last year on Ligature Marks. We had an amazing opportunity. The show was sold out, and they added us, even though it was sold out. And then they paid us, which is insane. It came out of the band's budget. It wasn't much, but they paid us still, which is huge. And we met the guys in the band, and they were the nicest people. They checked on us multiple times. They gave us our own room in the Roseland downstairs. They didn't have to do any of this. This is the band that's at the peak. They sold the Roseland out months before the show, and they wanted to give us an opportunity. And I'm like, how amazing is that? And then every day, or the day we were there, they were just so sweet, so nice, so thoughtful. I mean, that's a band that cares about trying to bring up and try to grow other bands. And I was like, these guys are just the best thing in the world. So, yeah, very, very... I never thought that day would happen, and it did. And I was like, oh, wow. And they're the coolest people in the world. I've actually had more luck with bands being good than not. But when you do work with the bands that suck for some reason, it's really, they stand out because they don't have to. You've seen people who make it effortlessly easy to be nice and good. So when people are kind of shitty, it really sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've heard some horror stories of some bands that I look up to, and it's just
Vinterseed gets compared to one band a lot, and we played with that band twice, and the first time was fine, and the second time was fucking horrible.
So if someone's listening right now and they're interested in becoming a videographer, it can get very expensive fast when we're talking about lenses and cameras and most likely gimbals if you're going to do video. What would you recommend for someone starting out? You kind of hit on it earlier, but I don't think you talked about lenses or gimbals. And are gimbals even necessary?
Gimbals are not necessary. I think people love them. You know, one of the things that drives me nuts is I see people, they all get a Sony, and then they all get some sort of gimbal crane, and then they like, yep, I'm a videographer. And I'm like, god damn, no, you're not. And, you know, I don't want to hate that stuff. I have gimbals. I have two. I have a Ronin M and a Ronin S, and I love them, but they're just tools. There's times to use them. There's times not to. But my thing is, if you have a camera and if you have a cell phone, you have a camera that's good enough to get started, or go out and get a used cheap Nikon or Canon with a lens, and then spend the rest of your money on lights. Lights will make the biggest difference. And once you figure out how to use lights, hopefully at that point you'll have more money and you can get a better lens. Lenses make a big difference, but you know, the jump from a $200 lens when you're first starting to, you know, a $500 lens, that's a kind of a big jump, man. So don't spend the money there. Mm-hmm. Go get lights, because lights are really important. Lights will make a huge difference. So, yeah, my thing is get a cheap camera or iPhone, Android. As long as your camera can shoot 1080p, you're set. You don't have to get anything else fancier, and just spend the rest of the money on lights.
So if you have a certain budget and you only can fit lighting or a gimbal.
Oh, yeah. If you just get a gimbal, you should just like take your left foot, stick it out a little bit, and then smash it with your right foot over and over. And not to rag on gimbals. Gimbals are great, but I just, you see people who, they just watch all the behind the scenes videos on Instagram and think that's how you have to do it. And I'm like, no, that's not really it. Like, we use on Jason Rising, we definitely use the gimbal, but it's in maybe a tenth of the shots. If you really want that smooth cinematic shots, what we use, you know, use dolly tripod jibs, and jibs are just a different word for cranes. And that's how you get a lot of the really cool motions. The gimbals can be cool, but they're not the end all.
And you didn't even mention drones, so I guess you would put that lower on the list. Necessities.
Unless you're doing like real estate, I don't think you need a drone at all to get started. They're really nice. I love mine. The DJI Phantom 4 Pro. But you know, one of the fun parts, and I'm sure you find this with photography gear, is if you upgrade something, there's a lot of times there's either, I don't want to call it hidden costs, but they were kind of drive you to upgrade other stuff. And when I was using my Nikon video, my Nikon cameras with the drones, the footage matched really well. But now that the Blackmagic has that 12-bit color, you can see the difference between the Blackmagic and the drone drastically. I mean, it just makes me not want to use my drone because it's just such poor quality compared to the Blackmagic.
So it's called the Blackmagic.
And in this case, it's a Blackmagic Pocket 4K. That's
funny. I used to buy my psychedelics from a guy named Blackmagic. So I'm just finding that funny. Okay. So that's cool. All right. Good information here for people listening. And while we're talking about gear, we need to talk about editing. So what program?
So I use Adobe Premiere. I'm on the Creative Cloud suite. I've also been learning DaVinci Resolve. DaVinci Resolve is really amazing for coloring. This is the way that the software works is great. It's also pretty good for editing. I've been taking some projects here and there and using it just to try to learn it. I've been using Adobe for so long that it's really hard to switch. But one of my goals this summer during the quarantine is to get better at coloring and to actually figure out how to finish a music video start to finish in Resolve.
Resolve.
So if you buy a Blackmagic Pocket 4K, Resolve comes with it for free. Actually, if you buy any Blackmagic device over $1,000, DaVinci Resolve comes with it for free. Or you can go to DaVinci Resolve's website and they have a free version that's basically fully featured. I can almost say that you won't run into anything your first year of doing this that you would need the paid version for. Or you can buy it for $300 outright, which is a steal, especially if you can consider like the Adobe suite is $50 a month. And I've been on that for years. So I've given them a lot of money. Where Resolve, you know, one time, $300, done. That's pretty cheap.
And what's your favorite lens?
I love them all. yeah, it's crazy. I go through phases where I really, really appreciate stuff. Because we do a lot of music videos, the wide lenses are really good for capturing bands in tighter spaces. So I have a Rokinon 14 and a Loa 14mm that are amazing. And they're just so nice. On the Nikon, they warp the edges really cool. The Blackmagic has a little bit of a crop. So they don't have that same warp, but they're just really good lenses to capture. You can get really close and capture a lot of stuff. And they're hard to get out of focus because they have such a nice depth of field. So those are amazing. I'd say my all-time go-to lens is the Rokinon 24mm for Blackmagic because the way with the crop factor it works out to just be that perfect field of view for what I like to do. And then that said, you know, we start doing Jason Rising stuff, the Rokinon 24, 35 and 50mm lens get tons and tons of use. Occasionally we'll do an 85 on that. And I recently bought a Zine 85. So now I have a Zine 20, 35 and 85 lens. And those are huge cinema lenses. They're really nice for a couple things. One, they look impressive as shit, but the lens coating on them is really good, and they're really good for using with wireless follow focuses or follow focuses. And what that means is the focus throw. So if I want to rack focus from something close up to far away, it's got a wider gear distribution, so you have to turn it more, but it makes it more accurate, so you're not going to overshoot. So those things have been just amazing on the movie. I tend not to use them on music videos as much because I don't want to damage them since they're more expensive. And also I don't want to have them get, they're heavier too. So if you're shooting for 6 hours handheld all day, you know, it can get pretty brutal.
Okay. So on the topic of equipment, if there's one thing that you want right now, if there's one piece of equipment, what would that be? Like, what is your
great question? So there's a Tokina 11 to 30 lens that a friend showed me some stills that he took with it, and I really want that lens. It's nice because it's zoom plus it's wide. I actually don't have any zoom lenses, so I don't know where you're at with that. I bought all primes, and I love them. I think they're great, but there are some times mm-hmm. where it'd be really nice to have a zoom lens, and especially a nice one. And for video, you have to be careful because you want them to be parafocal, which means that if you focus, if you zoom in or out, your subject's still in focus. The focus doesn't change. So video, they're a little bit more expensive to get nicer lenses that treat you right. Photography, it's a little bit easier. So I don't own any zoom lenses for anything. And I actually don't have any automatic lenses. They're all manual. So, yeah, that's why another reason I don't do a lot of photography is because I just have to go set. I have to spend a lot more time on setup. But I did just learn a neat trick, and I feel really stupid, where I actually managed to turn my Nikon D850 to live view. So it's more of what you see is what you get. And it blew my mind. I didn't know you could do it. I mean, it makes sense that it can. But I finally figured it out by mistake the other day. And I was like, oh, my God, this is incredible. I love this. So now I've been taking a lot more photos.
Yeah, I've been seeing your photos that you've been posting, especially the product stuff. Man. It's really good. On the topic of lenses, I only have one zoom lens. I prefer prime lens. I always will. Prime lenses seem to be the sharpest. I really want a Sony, I think it's a 600 prime lens. And
is it, it's like
$21,000.
Oh, wow. You could get some amazing moon shots and wildlife. And
yeah, I'm really into bird photography.
You're a birder.
I like shooting birds. So I thought... I'm a birder. That's hilarious. Apparently,
we went on a road trip to the Alvord Desert with some good friends, and they're birders. And every time they saw a hawk or something, like pull over, I'm like, oh my god, we have to make progress. But we did see some owls. We saw some stuff and some really cool birds and tons of things. But definitely drove me nuts that trip. Yeah,
I can imagine. Yeah, that makes sense. So
not really the Blackmagic for the money. I probably will have a couple years before I hit the edges of what this will do. You know, it's not a full frame camera, so the depth of field, like if I'm on my Nikon and you have a shot that's framed similarly, you can control the depth of field looks smaller. What that means is, like, let's say if I wanted a shot of somebody sitting on a porch and an object there, I could have the Nikon set so it basically just focuses on that person / the object. So you can really draw attention to it, where the Blackmagic's, depending on the lens you're using, it a lot more of the same shot is in focus. So it's not quite as like, pay attention to this thing. So I feel like I've been seeing and noticing a little bit more of those limitations on the current Blackmagic Pocket 4K. But you know, that's just I changed my lens and move where I'm at, and I can get the same shot that I wanted. So it hasn't been a showstopper by any means. And I feel like I've yet to tap the full potential of the camera. And what I mean by that is, and you know this too, like you have your camera, you shoot in RAW for video or photography, then you take it in and then you hit your editing. And my big thing right now is I want to make sure that my editing is as good as it can be. So I actually, bought a course on color grading recently, and I've been trying to spend some of the evenings working on that. So I feel like once I get better with color grading, once we're past the movie, maybe I'll start looking at a Red, but for the price that they're at right now, I'd like to be able to keep my video prices reasonable so I can work with bands that I like. You know, a lot of people don't have a whole lot of money, and I'm probably still putting more money into the business that I'm making, but I enjoy it. And I charge people, it helps buy new gear. So it feeds the gear addiction. Yeah. So no huge drive to get a Red, not big on name brands or anything for the most part. And the Blackmagics just have a phenomenal image.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Cause I had never heard of that before now. So I'm gonna have to look that up.
No, they're video only. They have still images you can capture, but you can't preview the images. So it does not replace my Nikon. I thought about selling my Nikon, but now that I've been using it more, I'm like, no, I love this thing too. They're just drastically different. And the other thing with the Blackmagics, because I do shoot in RAW or ProRes, which is 10-bit, the file sizes are a lot bigger. So if I do a music video with my Nikon, it might be 15 gigs, where that same video might be a terabyte with the Blackmagic. Yeah, so I am on 7 drives for the Jason Rising movie and music videos. Three alone dedicated for Jason Rising. So you end up eating a lot more disk space. So when I do gear review videos or playthrough videos of songs. Those are all going to be on the Nikon, so the disc space is smaller.
So do you have, to go off topic a little bit, do you have any interest in wedding photography or videography?
Maybe. I've done some wedding photos for people. I haven't done it yet because, you know, I've been so booked up the last couple of years with music videos. The way it's been working is basically, I would say out of any average month, I shoot at least 2 music videos on a weekend and then edit during the week. And, you know, you can get stacked up pretty hardcore on that. So my schedule the last 3 years has been kind of insane, honestly. It's been nice to have the coronavirus is nice, but the forced quarantine was kind of nice because I was actually able to go back and finish up some things that got skipped. It's been nice to not have to shoot every weekend and then rush through editing. Like, I can work on trying to learn some new skills, and there's time to do that. So yeah, I've never done it because, one, I didn't want to sell it. I feel like I always undercut myself on pricing, and I was just kind of busy, especially with the movie too. The movie was the wild card the last 2 years, where it's been really difficult to try to schedule things properly.
Yeah. And I only ask because so many wedding photographers, they claim, you know, if you want to be successful, you have to shoot weddings because the pay is so good. And I don't think
That same stuff floating around in the forums on Facebook, like, or the groups. There's definitely a lot of people who can make a good living there. I know people who do really well on that, but my goal isn't to make a living off of this yet, but for music videos, it'd be nice if I could work, you know, with bands that had bigger budgets too. But filming weddings, I feel like that would get old after a while. And I'd rather work on things that I want to work on. I mean, when I work with bands like American Overdose or Toxic Zombie, they have really cool ideas. Dead Animal Semi Plant, like, they just have some of the coolest ideas. How many weddings? They're beautiful locations, probably like awesome people. But I'd rather get booted from a graveyard on a Sunday night for filming a music video for a metal band and throw a fake dead body over a river when onlookers look at you horrified, trying to figure out what the hell's going on. I'd rather be doing that than I would filming somebody's best day and, you know, dealing with all the stress that goes with that. I found myself in some amazing situations where I'm like, God, this is hilarious. I wish I could. I don't talk about it a whole lot at work, but it's just hilarious. And I know you've been there too. You know, we've got thrown out of stuff. People yell at you. You're just living life.
Yep. I get it all the time. So I really want, if there's someone listening who is really interested in video and really interested in working with bands, maybe they see some of the videos that you've done and they're like, man, I want to do that. That's what I want to do. Can you tell them what advice can you give someone who maybe hasn't worked with a band yet, but they just know that's what I want to do. I want to.
Yeah, they should just start. That sounds easy to say it, but I feel like a lot of times people want to do it and then they don't make that first leap. So that first leap might be different. If you have a camera and a lens, you could technically record. You want to make sure you have enough battery or power to get through a couple hours of filming, but there's nothing stopping you from going and doing it. So if you don't know bands, you could always make an example, or you have a friend go out and you film a fake music video for a band and then put that in your reel and say, hey, here's what I can do. And people can see it. But, you know, network with bands if you want. Hit them up on Facebook or whatever. People always need stuff and they don't want to pay for it typically, or they don't have a whole lot of money. So if you're just starting and you're trying to build your portfolio, people really like that. I definitely have bands that hit me up and say, hey, are you still working on your portfolio? I'm like, nope, sorry. But yeah, just get going. The one thing that you have to do is you have to figure out some sort of playback. And it's really easy if you're working with somebody who does rap or acoustic, because all it takes is a Bluetooth speaker. But if you're going to work with a full band, I have a little bit of a crazy setup where I'm happy I'm a musician too. So basically I have a PA. So I have 2 speakers and a mixer and a power amp. And then I run in-ear headphones to the drummer, and they're special headphones. So they're like $80 from Shure. And they just do noise cancellation. So what that does is the drummer gets a version of the song that he can hear, or he or she, and it isolates everything else. And then everybody else gets blasted by either the drums or the speakers. And typically most people are used to playing to the drums. So if they can't quite hear the speakers, they should be good. But I can also turn the PA up, really loud so people can hear. But that's how you get full band shots and make sure everyone can hear. If you don't have the headphones, you have to turn up the PA so damn loud for the drummer to be able to hear it that you're killing everyone else, or you know, you're going to blow your PA out. Because the cymbals are loud on drums. So that's the biggest hurdle to overcome. Mm-hmm. And that's how I fixed it.
And I think a lot of people, including myself early on, maybe think that bands have more money than they actually do. So I think it's good to know, if you're thinking about doing this as a career, it's good to realize that bands don't have.
Yeah. And so I've worked with quite a few bands on labels too. And, you know, they might have a little bit more of a budget, or they might actually have a budget, but typically it's not much more. And a lot of times it's still coming out of the band's pockets. Sometimes the label will give them an advance, but you know, even then it's not much. Everybody wants to bleed the bands out of money. It's when you're in a band, everything costs money. And when you make money, everybody takes a piece of it too. It's really brutal. So you have to be hitting hard and selling a lot to actually start making any sort of money. And even when you do, then you have to re-up on merch. I mean, it's just a never ending cycle. So, you know, Vinercy is doing really good right now, and we're still, I'll just say all the money that's coming in won't pay for the next video at all. That's coming right now. It's all out of my pocket and some other people in the band's pocket.
So if you could work with any band, who would it be?
I'll say there's like a couple. So my favorite one would be Gojira. I've talked about them already and I love them. They also have really good videos, so they don't need it. But I think there's some bands like Machine Head or Seven Dust where they've never truly had a great video. And I think I could do it. Like I watched some of their stuff and I'm like, God damn it. Like, so it's so close to being good, but it's not. And some of it's just like little editing things, like zoom in so you don't see the dude's gut when he lifts his shirt up. Like, come on. Or like, did you forget to color correct this? Like, what the hell are you doing? So and I would love to work with bands like Mastodon or Rammstein, but you know, they've got it. So I'd rather offer my services to bands that need it, where I'm like, we could make some amazing stuff for a fraction of what you've been paying and actually give you goddamn good video for once.
Somebody listening right now, if they're thinking, no, I don't want to do music videos, but I would love to take photos of live shows. How do they do that? Like, how do they get that gig?
That's a great question. So the best way to handle that is you need a media pass from somewhere. So I would say get some cool photos that you've done that you're really proud of, and then hit up some of the places that do media. So Metal, Pulp and Paper is one. There's a lot of local zines, MERP. They also have a couple of photographers, but go hit up those places, Vortex. Say, hey, I want to do photos. I'm really good. I'd like to do, you know, band photos. And they can get you, if they like your work, they can get you in. The other way is just go to shows and like local shows and bring your camera. A lot of times they'll just let people bring cameras in. Bands will love photos. Send them photos, you know, pick your, don't grab all of them and send them to the band. Go pick your best five and that's it. Limit yourself ahead of time to how many photos you're going to say are your best. And that'll help narrow it down, edit them, make them look good, and then give them to the band. And if you don't talk to them beforehand about charging for photos, do not hit them up afterwards and say, I got photos, you know.
Yeah.
Buy them for $20. That's not cool. But just go start taking photos at shows. And a lot of times when you hit the big shows, they'll let you get the first three songs and then that's it. So you funnel in, you take, you know, photos for the first couple songs of the band and you funnel out. And then when the next artist goes up, you can take more photos. But I think those are the easiest ways to get in. And those are both, you know, what you start, you can always go to local shows, get photos of the bands, and then go hit up some of the media places and say, hey, I'm a photographer. The other part is you have to be, and this is, you know, I think where you and I excel, you have to be flexible. So let's say you had a date night with your significant other planned, and then somebody said, you know, you've been trying to do this for a while, and somebody hit you up and said, hey, our normal photographer bailed out tonight. Can you step in? The obvious answer is yes. Most people don't do that, though. And it's really hard to get last minute stuff. So if those opportunities come your way, take them. Yeah. I don't care if there's no money. Go do it. You know, my biggest things that have paid the most rewards are the random ass opportunities that I took. Yeah. And a lot of times there's no money in it and it's okay. Just go do it and you'll meet cool people. Your network grows. Take advantage of the opportunities.
Yeah, I agree. So if a big band is coming into town, you wouldn't hit up the band or the venue even. You would hit up one of these media companies.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I've always wondered about that.
Yeah. So no, that's actually, I think that's probably the best practical advice I've given on the show so far.
I think so. I'm probably just going to delete everything else. So.
And it's something I don't even do.
If you could shoot anywhere, where do you think that would be? Do you have like a dream location for a shoot? And it could be in an abandoned building in Cincinnati. I don't know.
Yeah, so that is a great question. I checked one of them off, which is the Satsop nuclear plant.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just so cool. I think right now, if I could shoot anywhere, my next two locations that would be dream locations are that don't seem quite realistic at this point are Iceland and then Antarctica. In Iceland, because I've always been a huge fan of Ridley Scott. And, you know, yeah. Prometheus is a flawed movie, but I love it. I love that movie so much. And I don't care that it's flawed. I know parts of it are suck and don't make sense. And I still love it. It's just so good. And some of the scenery shots there are just jaw dropping. And I don't know if you've ever been to the Alvord Desert or the Steens. The Steens mountain ranges have some of the same fjords carved out by glaciers. So they're just crazy, like mile long, like just things just carved out of the mountains. And you can actually go drive up there. It's the highest elevation in Oregon that you can actually go drive on. It's 9,000 feet. And it's insane. And it looks like it's an Iceland. It looks like it's from a different planet. It's just gorgeous. And I would love to film in Iceland. I've hit the Steens, so that's why it's not on the list. I didn't really film there. But it's also, I think, doable, where Iceland right now is not quite doable for me.
Yeah,
I mean, it could be within a year, but no plans at the moment. And then Antarctica, because I've never been there. Very few people have been to Antarctica, and I really want to see it.
That would be cool. Yeah. So not Chernobyl.
No, I hit a nuke plant already, so, you know, I'm good.
Close enough. Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to go to Pripyat. I'm probably screwing the pronunciation of that up, but the town next to it, because it's, you know, nature's starting to take over. I love that stuff, too. You know, I know you and I have a fascination and fondness for, like, abandoned places and things that are kind of screwed up, and I just... Anything that's like that, I just geek out over and love.
So you mentioned Ridley Scott. Who would you say, if anyone, you don't need to name a cinematographer because people won't know who you're talking about, but maybe some movies that have influenced your style in video?
Great question. So Roger Deakins is probably pretty famous. Same with Brad Young. Those guys did like Arrival or Sicario or 1917. And they're just masters at what they do. For me, music videos are a different beast. A lot of times they're not quite as cinematic because you have so much motion. So the shots aren't as planned or as like meaningful. But there's been a lot of people where you try to take cool ideas from, like top-down lighting in Tarantino movies, for instance, and he'll put like a reflector board on a table. So you get this really weird top-down lighting. Plus there's like weird reflections coming up off the table. Fincher is another person where I love his aesthetics. That's a director, but he's really strong and consistent. So I'll just say that, you know, it's a lot of it's his work. But you know, the big thing is on Jason Rising, if you watch a really good movie, a lot of the movie happens at night in the woods. You can't just light your actors. You have to light the trees behind them. Mm-hmm. Otherwise you just have your actors in a big void of dark. And you can't see anything. So the challenge is to make it look natural.
Yeah.
And when I watch movies now, I'm tearing apart how they film this stuff at night. I watched one the other day called Dark Was the Night, and they fucked it up horribly. Like, we shot our movie better than they shot theirs. Like, sorry.
Sounds familiar.
It stars Kevin Durant. It's a good movie. I liked it. There's a lot of really cool things in it, but it was hilarious to watch some of the filming where you're like, wow, they didn't really know what they were doing here. I don't want to sound egotistical there because, you know, our movie's not out yet and people will, you know, could probably rag on it, but their movie was still good regardless. But I'm like, all right, you know what? We at least nailed that part of ours. Our nighttime forest shots look good.
So from a cinematography standpoint, what's your favorite show on Netflix right now?
So can I switch that to HBO? HBO's The Outsider. I don't know if you've seen that yet. No. Jason Bateman is an executive producer. He's in some of the episodes too. It's really weird. They have a lot of things in there that break the rules that people will tell you not to do. And what I mean by that is they shoot sometimes with an extremely shallow depth of field. So that you see, they have an establishing shot, the camera's on a tripod, and one part of this thing is in focus. And then you have a person walk into frame, they're out of focus. And then it turns out they walk over and open that desk drawer that it was focused on. And but it's a long walk up. So it's like, you know, 30 seconds. And in most shows wouldn't show that drawer being opened, or they just cut right to it. They wouldn't have that walk up to it, and they would have more things in focus. So they break a lot of rules, and they do it consistently. And it's just such a good and unique style. And it's like, God, that was kind of an eye opener where you're like, wow, like they did everything that people said you're not supposed to, and they made it work, and it's awesome. And it adds to like the weird creepiness, because sometimes it just sets up the tension perfect, or other times it hides the tension, and then something crazy happens and you're like, oh shit, I wasn't expecting that, because it led me astray. And then HBO's The Watchmen was also a jaw-dropping show on writing, cinematography, just the whole package is just so good.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Also Westworld. HBO is the thing, you know, I don't watch a whole lot of TV right now, but HBO has been crushing it on their original series. And then as far as Netflix, Extraction was really beautiful. The color grading there was awesome. I did see that there's some controversy because it was colored yellow. And if you go, when I went to China, there's definitely a lot of haze in the sky and pollution. And it kind of has that look. So people are saying, well, it's kind of racist that if you're in an exotic country, like India in this case, you know, you have a yellow hazy sky. That said... it looked gorgeous. It wasn't quite the teal and orange color that people are expecting, that, you know, so prevalent. So part of me is like, hey, they changed it up. And then you read those things and you think twice about it. And you're like, oh, that sucks.
The final thoughts are, what is your biggest goal for the rest of this year? Do you have one or two big goals that you would love to hit this year?
I do. So one of them is to finish filming Jason Rising. And part of that's up to us. Part of it's not. So if the coronavirus comes back in a second wave before they open up some of the guidelines for filming, we probably won't finish it. Right now we're hoping to release it November 13th. So my goal is to get it done this year, but if it's not, I'm not going to worry about it, because it's kind of out of our hands a little bit. I'd rather make sure people are safe than risk it. And then, so that's huge. I mean, I've been working at this for a couple years of my life now, and I've loved it, and it's been so much work, but it's going so great. And James, the director, is amazing. The next big goal I would say is the next Vintercy video. I can't talk about it too much yet because it's not out yet, and we're still a little bit of a ways off from really starting it, but there's some really cool ideas. I already checked off one of those kind of like ideas that were so crazy that when I told people, they kind of scoffed at it. I took care of one of those. I'll have to send you some pictures of it. But you know, when people see it, I think they'll know what I'm talking about. But it's a huge stretch. The whole video is a stretch, but I nailed the first part. We're just going to keep nailing it.
Those are my favorite kind of goals. The ones that other people scoff at. That's how you know it's a good goal.
Yeah. And it's funny because I think that there's some of these where I'm wondering, like, do my bandmates think I'm insane? And, you know, because I don't think anybody thought we could shoot at the nuke plant. And we did. And, you know, I was sick to my stomach on the way up there, because I was thinking like, oh God, something's going to go wrong. Like, we're going to have a problem. Somebody's going to be late. Mm-hmm. This isn't going to happen, you know? And we just showed up and everybody rocked it, and everyone is great. And we did it, but it's just, you know, it took some time to hunt down who to contact, and then to stay on top of them, cause they weren't very good at getting back to me. And then, you know, next thing you know, it happens, and it costs money and had to get insurance and like all sorts of stuff. But you do it, you just work hard at it. So I have another music video like that. And then we're also starting to put together the plans for the next Ligature Marks video too. So I'm really pumped on that one. And, you know, it's hard to do it during the pandemic, because a lot of times you do in Ligature Marks, we do our best work when some of us are together and bouncing ideas off each other. So it's been a little bit harder. And it's also hard to talk to people, because they're like, you want to shoot now? Like, well, if it's four people, yeah, we can stay the hell away from each other and be fine.
So if someone's listening right now and they kind of, they do what you do, they shoot music videos, and they're in the Portland area and they're looking for a studio. Is there just one studio that you'd recommend, which would be Cobalt, or is there other studios that you like?
Cobalt is my favorite. Lumen is also really good. You've been there. It's, it just, you know, each room is kind of set up one way, and then that's it. And you just go from room to room. So it's not quite as good for video, but we shot part of the Vintercy illuminated video there. It's super beautiful, really luxurious area. Mm-hmm. Wild Studios was pretty cool, but they charge $200 an hour for video, which is fucking astronomical. Really nice people though, but God, it was expensive and it hurt, you know, that video cost a lot, and it's underperforming compared to all the others. So that kind of makes me cry inside. Then Cobalt is the best bang for the buck. That's $50 an hour without lights. A little bit more if you want to rent their lights. But you have a black wall that you can. I do a lot of top down lighting in front of it, and it's just really nice. And then they have that white cyclorama wall, which is kind of like an infinity wall, and that's gorgeous too. Plus, the owners are amazing, and they'll help you. They'll let you use stuff. Like, I use their smoke machine. I have one, but I don't have to bring it because they have one. It's just great. The makeup station's legit. The changing area is awesome. I don't know. The problem I'd run into, and the reason I don't shoot there more, is everything would look the same. There's just only so much you can do, even while changing lighting and things up. But I love that place, and if I could shoot there every day, I would. I wish they were twice the space, and I could build sets in there. I'd tell them I'm going to move in.
Yeah, I feel the same way. That's by far my favorite studio.
Yeah. Every time I go in there, I'm just like, God, they're so awesome. And I've checked out some other places in town, like the Lightroom, but you don't even meet the people. We couldn't get a contact with them, and it was stupid.
So where can people find you?
Great question. Go to my website, www.hotcarlproductions.com, and that's Hot Carl, and that's Carl with a K. And then also on Instagram as Hot Carl Productions.
So you're not on TikTok
now? No, God, no.
Shame on you.
You know, I try to like to stay on top of social media a little bit, but I also like to try to just go create. I concentrate on Facebook and Instagram. So that's where I've been putting my focus. And I haven't done TikTok. I've loved your TikTok videos. I've shown my wife yours. I've showed friends yours because I'm just like, oh, my God, that's hilarious.
Well, thank you. Okay, so any last words of advice for anyone listening who's interested in getting into video?
Believe in yourself. Just go do it. And you don't have to wait for permission. And even sometimes your best friends or significant others will tell you not to do it, or they just won't be supportive. Who cares? Go do it. You don't need people's permission. Like, you just need your own, and you should give yourself permission to go do it. I can almost guarantee you, you're good enough. And if you aren't, you'll get good enough. We all suck when we start, but get out there and create. I also need people to consume and share. So if you see my stuff or other people's, share it, like it. It helps so much. It doesn't cost you anything. But if you're looking at doing this, just go ahead and go for it.
Yep. Just do it. Not sponsored by
Marcia.
Cool, man. Well, thank you again. I appreciate the good conversation.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. And hopefully we can chat more.
Awesome. Right on, man. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, you too. Cheers.